Today's Fan Run Podcast is brought to you by DraftKings.
DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the UFC, is putting you in the center of this weekend's UFC 261 title fight with 26-1 odds on either fighter to win. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code FANRUN in all caps when you sign up to turn $5 into $135 if the title contender of your choice wins. That's code FANRUN in all caps to turn $5 into $135. Must be 21 or older in Tennessee only. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, want help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line. 1-800-889-9789.
And here we go. Hour number two of the Blitz is live here on Fan Run Radio, Fox Sports, Knoxville, broadcasting live on the radio, 105.7 FM, 1340 AM. As always, our Periscope is streaming right now live on the Facebook and Twitter accounts, in case you want to go check in with the show that way in the video stream. Of course, we also have the Fan Run Radio app that is available to download for free on your app store. It's available anytime. Anywhere you can go and take the show, take the station, wherever you are headed each and every day throughout the day. And of course, go ahead and check out fanradio.com. Man, there's a lot of great stuff on it, including an article that we are going to check in with here in just about a minute or two, as we also talk a little bit about some Tennessee football news coming up here. So hey, those are all of your listening options. Those are all your viewing options for today. No matter how you're listening, we appreciate you guys. Hour number one in the books, hour number two on deck. Still got plenty of stuff to get into. You guys ready to roll?
Yeah, I just stumbled across this video on Twitter, though. Deer? You have deer on your ranch?
Lots of them.
Oh my gosh, you're looking at that video.
Yeah!
Dude, it's like a clown car. There's a video on my own Twitter, at Rick_Butler. And yeah, we have a family ranch down there in Central Texas, and we got some deer dropped off yesterday. My dad met this guy, and he brought over this trailer. And hold on, let me show you the other video real quick, so you can watch this as I explain. The guy brings over this trailer, and you can kind of see, it doesn't really look like there's many deer, but then they fling open the door, they kind of start banging on the edge a little bit, and like 10 to 12 deer. All at once, just fly out of this trailer like a literal clown car. It's amazing. So yes, deer.
Huh. What do you need the deer for?
To multiply. We need them to have deer babies.
Yeah, but like, do you want them to eat grass or something? Like, what do you need them for?
The ranch gets rented out to hunters in the right seasons. So, hey, if you want to go to Texas, hit me up. We'll make a little bit of a deal. But it does. It gets rented out to hunters. Okay. And then also, you know, it's just a lot of land right there. So
just everyone that's watching the video on Rick's Twitter, just know that those deer are being brought there to be shot and killed.
Well, they're there to make babies first. You got to reproduce the land a little bit. So
make that, babies that and then kill the babies.
No. Let the babies grow up, have babies, and then you see what happens. So, anyways, yes, Brandon, deer. Deer in the clown car.
Very cool.
Very cool.
So are we going to eat these deer?
Huh?
Are we going to eat them?
Sure, but we got
to
go
are
there.
Are we all going to Texas and hunting next deer?
No, I want some deer steak, some deer jerky.
Well, we can do all of that. We can do it.
I just making sure that the plans were to eventually eat the deer.
Yeah, absolutely. It's what happens.
Love venison. It's good stuff.
So yeah, deer. Weird creatures. Anyways, all right, so I want to spend the first segment of this second hour talking about this article that we had brought up a little bit on fanrunradio.com earlier at the beginning of the show. But first, while it is still on the football note, Chance, you just told me a couple minutes ago that there might have been a little bit of football news or some kind of story. Go ahead and explain.
Vol sophomore Bryson Eason spoke this week during a media session with reporters and explain the stark differences between Jeremy Pruitt and Josh Heupel.
Interesting.
So Eason, sophomore linebacker, signed with UT when Pruitt was the head coach. But he made it clear this week that he committed to the program and not a coach. Quote, I came here to play for my state, to play for Tennessee, not for any particular coach. And this was yesterday during a media session. And he said he would have wanted to stay at Tennessee regardless who was hired. But he went on to say, I'm glad Coach Heupel is our coach. I like playing for him. Then it's what he went on to say after that.
Yeah, that's going to get fascinating.
And I think that a lot of us knew this, and this is probably why Pruitt didn't succeed. And even like where he had a lot of headbutts, headbanging with his coaches, just kind of his overall approach. According to Eason, the practice under Heupel are catered to players, whereas the practices under Pruitt had a military vibe. Quote, with the previous staff, it was more of a military style of practices. It was very strict. The practice is now more catered to us, the team, and the players. It's just a whole different kind of energy level. He also noted, quote, the family vibe under Heupel, a phrase that's becoming very common since he's gotten here. Added that he loves Heupel's family atmosphere, that it makes it easier to play with guys on the field when he knows them well off of it. Quote, I'd go to war for these guys anytime, anywhere. Said the vibe under Heupel is a complete 180 from the Pruitt era. Players are encouraged to have fun while also working hard.
Interesting. That's very fascinating to me. And Chance, you're right. I think a lot of us probably assumed
that.
A lot of things along those lines. I think that certain stories and reports made us believe that those things were happening. But straight out of the mouth, it's really interesting to hear. And those are strong words that I don't gloss right over. What he's saying that, you know, hey, we are actually allowed to have fun here, and it's not a militaristic feel.
It's
college kids at a football practice field. I know that there is intensity. I know that this is a multi-million-dollar business that these kids are involved in, but at the same time, you're not going to go anywhere if you're not having fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just shows, like, okay, yes, we know that Pruitt was trying to be like Nick Saban, but people have to understand Nick Saban earned the right to be that way.
Great point.
From winning national titles and winning countless SEC championships and what he's done in Alabama. If he was not a winner, I don't think his same strict approach maybe would work as well with his coaches and with his players. But when you win and people see that you win and that you're able to send them to the NFL because it's a draft factory over there at Alabama, you can do those things. Pruitt came in here trying to be like Saban without winning anything or doing anything yet. And I believe I like Heupel's approach. Like, yes, sometimes the player's coach isn't the best thing, but when you're a new coach, you kind of got to do something to get your guys to rally around each other. As gimmicky as it sounds, you have to, though.
Dude, I can't imagine
unless
that,
you're a proven coach that's, you know, won titles.
Can't imagine that Tua or, you know, a Derrick Henry is sitting there going, you know what, I really wish I had maybe a little bit more fun in college. I'm really bummed out that it was just national championships and I'm only in the NFL after a first-round pick now. If you're going to Alabama, you don't have the expectation, or you do have the expectation of, hey, we're going to probably win a lot of championships because we are going to have this style. And, yeah, we might not have as fun as other teams, but we know this is going to work. And, Chance, like you're saying, that never worked previously here at Tennessee, so there's nothing to buy into on that front. I think it eventually just ended up being a really depressing, a really lackluster, low-energy locker room. If you have a militaristic feel, if you have a coach that you don't believe in, if you have a coach that's looking like is could potentially be on the way out, man, last season was just a disaster, the more you think about it in hindsight.
So, yeah, I thought that was pretty interesting for the player to come out and say it, but like you said,
his whole tenure was a disaster.
I think we all speculated as much with the rifts that he had with assistant coaches that came out afterwards and just all the things that he had going on with his own players. Like, you can do those things. You can do that as a coach, but you damn sure better win.
Damn sure. Yeah. And look, if you're not going to win, at least do the next best thing and make sure that the players, they're still happy. Otherwise, you're going to have a situation like last year. Or again, you have guys transferring out. You got guys declaring instantly because they just want to get out of the rough waters that is the program. That's really fascinating, coming out from Bryce and Eason yesterday. You know, but Something else that sticks out to me, and so I really want to open up the conversation, something else that actually sticks out to me and transitions to what we're going with next is, Chance, and I don't know if you still have that article pulled up, but at the beginning he says something like, I did not come here to play for any specific coach. Came here to play for the University of Tennessee.
Yeah, committed to play for the university. He wanted to play for his state university. It was never about coming for Pruitt.
Now, no knock on Easton at all, and that's an awesome thing, and I think it's very commendable, but I find that extremely surprising for any college football player in the year of 2019, 2020, 2021. Just with everything going on now, that's surprising to me that his loyalty to the state, his loyalty to the team, outweighs everything else. I think that actually that might be a little bit more of a rare thing in college football. You know, again, we've talked about this on numerous different occasions, but this is going over to now checking in with the article on the website. Is Tennessee losing a generation of Vol fans? Brandon, anyway, you and I both think, you know, yes, and we'll get more opinions on it as well, but it's one of the things that they talk about, right? You don't have as many kids you don't have as much loyalty in the sport right now, I don't think, or just in college athletics. And no knock on anybody for not having loyalty. It's just a completely different era than it's ever been before.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I just jumped in.
I mean, I was just going to say, I mean, the sport as a whole has changed. And I know this isn't really talking about fans, but
yeah,
I mean, you go from in the 90s and 80s, it was you had coaches that went to that school and players that came from the state, and it was all about being from that place.
Sure.
Mostly. And then I would say, I don't know, probably sometime in the mid-2000s, I'll say.
I'll give you 2008, because that's where his stats start.
Around the mid-2000s, it's like there was a switch, and college football became somewhat of a mercenary sport.
Mm.
And it's not about being from that place, and you have coaches that are from different places that don't really care about the school.
Sure.
Don't really care about, and I'm sure there are some out there, but it just, and I think it kind of trickles down.
I think you make an excellent point there. And I got to stop myself even from swaying this conversation the wrong way. I think the way that I'm programmed is to continue to go back to this state of, you know, are we losing recruits? When that's not the question that's brought up here. The question is, are we losing a generation of all fans? Brandon, I think for so many reasons that you just said, you know, for the switch that college football has gone into that Tennessee has not been able to keep up with, yeah, you're losing a lot of momentum around the program. Here is the way that, again, our own Kevin Rose, he's classifying fandom in a scientific way. I love this. I think this is brilliant. Classifying fandom as this three stages: shape, cement, and vest. All right, the shape stage is when you don't know a lick about anything and you're just dressed in whatever your parents give you. Right? We're all dressed in orange as kids. Chance, I don't know if you were in, you know, Florida State gear or Tennessee gear or whatever it was, but you know, we all develop those fandoms and those rooting interests by our parents. Then you come the cement stage, where it's a little bit around the high school time, where you start making your own opinions in everything, whether it is your favorite teams, your political views, your religious views, your personal views, whatever it is. You start to cement a little bit more of your own opinion. And this is really the first big time to see if, hey, all these kids that have grown up Tennessee fans are going to stay Tennessee fans. Then the last stage is invest. At some point, you're gonna be older. You're going to be our age. Is Tennessee enough of something you're invested in to then go and spend your money in? Look, we talk about Tennessee all the time, which is great, but are they doing something to make us say, all right, on Saturday, I'm going to pay $30 and I'm going to go here. On Saturday, I'm going to pay $150 and I'm going to go here. I think that's actually a brilliant way to look at the idea of what fandom is. And according to Kevin here, the big issue is really when you get into the cement stage. He talks about the 13-year stretch from 1986 to, I guess, 1999. In that time, 123 wins, 783 winning percentage, one losing season, four conference titles, one national championship. Then look at about 28 to 2021, right? The 13-year stretch that we are in right
2008
now. 2008, excuse me. Vols winning percentage, 488. It's below Alabama, Florida, Georgia. It's, you know, it's obviously not good. So he brings up, I guess, his thesis here is that Tennessee is losing its fans in the cement stage because you really have nothing to cement that into place if you are not in the right situation. If you're growing up around the school, around the campus, maybe you truly have some diehard parents or something like that, maybe that is a little bit more likely. But I do find that interesting. And then he referenced one more thing. Go back to when Philip Fulmer made that that very distinct quote, Tennessee is judged by what?
Florida, Georgia, Alabama.
Look, maybe it's time that we abandon that. Maybe it's time that we don't think that way anymore. And I know that that's not a great way to look at it. Maybe even some will look at that as a loser's mentality. But look, we're not on that level. We're not even remotely close to it. We're not even a little bit close to it. I don't know if right now, after 13 years of sub-500 football in a row, do we really want to go into these next couple of years with our expectations of you're judged by how you beat Alabama, Florida, Georgia? I don't know, man. In my life, you know what it's been judged on? Because nobody's beaten those schools. Tennessee football is based on how you beat South Carolina, Kentucky, and Vanderbilt. Truly. And that sucks to say, but maybe there should be a little bit of a switch. Maybe we can't be thinking like it's 1997 anymore. You're judged on Alabama, Florida, Georgia. Look, also, Alabama wasn't good then. They didn't have a dynasty. Now we have to base our program based on an Alabama dynasty that wasn't even around when the quote was established. That's stupid. I've never liked that thing that you're judged on how you get Alabama, Florida, Georgia. Well, none of them were the way that they are now. Maybe, to an extent. So here's my proposition to erase that. Again, if you guys disagree, I understand that. Maybe a little bit of loser's mentality, but I am so sick of comparing ourselves to Alabama, Florida, Georgia, comparing that success. Maybe we need to alter our expectations a little bit as we make the climb back up. Clearly, we're never going to just jump. That's never going to happen. In college football, it's seemingly impossible to do that now. Maybe you do have to take a little bit of more slower steps. I'm personally done comparing us to Alabama, Florida, Georgia just because Philip Fulmer told us we had to 15 years ago when Alabama had not made the greatest dynasty in sports.
What's your problem?
What?
You've had a real loser's mentality this week.
Whoa. A real loser's mentality?
You have.
What?
From on Monday saying that losing two out of three to Vanderbilt was a success.
Tony Vitello said that there were great positive takeaways, even in losses. They learned things. I consider that a success.
Oh, yeah, there were positive takeaways, but that doesn't mean it was a success. Now you're saying we got to just completely abandon all hope against Florida, Georgia, and Alabama? I mean, do I think we're going to win anytime soon? No. But I still think that's – you can't just give up. By saying that, you're saying that you're okay with being on the level of Kentucky, South Carolina, and Missouri for the rest of the program. Is that what you're saying?
No, but I'm not going to say that I don't want to fail expectations for every year from now on. I don't know when the hell we're going to ever get on these levels.
Just because you're failing your expectations doesn't mean you should move the bar down.
I think you have to adjust your expectations and reset more realistic expectations. I think it's a totally different game from when he made that quote.
I mean, I agree. I agree, and we are not on the same playing field, but I just don't think you can just completely give up all hope and say that you can't judge yourself on that anymore. If that's not what we're doing, then why are we – let's just – I mean, why
are we here?
Fascinating conversation. Pick it back up. Oh, looks like right here this could be a little bit of programming news that you might want to be interested in knowing. This guy has taken our airwaves by storm. I feel like he might be the most popular person on the station, even though he's located on the complete other side of the country. But I'm seeing right here on Twitter, it just announced from Russell 18 minutes ago, looks like Christopher Gabriel will be rejoining the drive today at approximately 3:20 p.m. Eastern time. Seriously, I don't know if anybody gets the people as riled up on Twitter as when Chris Gabriel jumps on our program or on our network. People love this guy.
It's pretty good.
He's a great guest.
He is.
He brings a lot of energy, and then he kind of has, he sounds like a Yankee. So a lot of people, just being honest, he has that Midwestern Northern accent. I remember when I first met him when I was doing It's Optional with Trey, because I know that was one of Trey's guys.
Yeah.
He's really good. I mean, he brings a lot of energy, and he's very informative, and he holds no punches back at all. And speaking of programming news, this Saturday.
Yes, sir.
Meet and greet with Outkick and Fan Run at the Old City Sports Bar. That's right, 106 South Central Street from 12 to 3:30 ahead of the Orange and White game. You will get to come out and meet all the Outkick guys. That's Clay Travis, Chad Withrow, I think Jonathan Hutton. And then also you get to hang out with some of your Fan Run Radio favorites. And also, just to let you know, Craft Axe Throwing will be presenting the Outkick Fan Run Meetup. That's right.
Very nice.
Just to let you know, axes and beer. What better way to spend an evening with friends? Get 15% off your booking with promo code FANRUN at the checkout. And go ahead, remember that, 15% off your booking with promo code FANRUN at checkout. Plan your visit today at craftaxethrowing.com. Thank you to all the wonderful things that Craft Axe Throwing has done for the station. Like I say, stay local.
Yeah, and also, I just saw this from 45 minutes ago. Big news. Big news. Brandon, do you like beer?
Yes.
Do you like free beer?
Yes.
Charlie, you like beer?
Not really.
Okay, good. Brandon, this is for you then.
Next time, say yes.
It's for anybody.
Just kidding. I love beer.
There you go.
Who loves a good free beer. Chad Withrow tweeted out, just got word that there will be free drink options for the first 20 people at Saturday's event in Knoxville. Make sure they're early. Make sure they're, just frankly, early. You want to get there early to get the free stuff. So Chad even says here, DM him to reserve your spot. But, hey, we can't wait to see you there. And can't wait to hang out before the Orange and White game. Again, I don't know what the Orange and White game is going to look like. I guess if we give you another weather check. I looked at it this morning, and it looked exactly like how we've thought it looked so far. Let's see. 98% chance of rain on Saturday.
Mud season.
Although, you get a little break around 6 o'clock, so who knows? Maybe they could actually work something in, but Charlie's
periods
right,
of
be,
rain, potential for
rain.
Heavy rainfall. Yeesh. Rainfall near a half an inch Saturday morning, another quarter of an inch in the afternoon.
Yeah, it could be a difficult event, but that's why it'll be nice to be indoors around some TVs, watching some football, drinking a little beer with the guys from Outkick and Fan Run coming up this Saturday. Chance is correct. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Do not want to miss it. Be there or be square. You know, so, been a while, had you? I saw you look up, Brandon.
I hear that like once a day.
Really?
Yeah.
That's why I know you're cool.
That gave me L7 Very Weenie cool. vibes from Sandlot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, always does. Wrapping up a good conversation there in the first segment of the second hour, where we were discussing a little bit about Tennessee's rivals.
You both are
football.
Right.
Yeah, and that's what I want to do. See your opinion. So, Chance, what do you think about this?
I mean, you both are right.
Okay.
Brandon makes a good point that to be good again and to be great, you can't just be like, well, we can't worry about beating the best teams in the league. You can't worry about trying to beat Florida or trying to beat Georgia because you're just not on their level. You can't have that mentality. You're very right. But then also, you are right in a way, too, because you just have to tailor like your expectations as they go along. So, like, first year of Heupel, yeah, nobody's – I mean, if he beats Florida, it's wow. That's awesome. That's great. You might
very
have
cool.
Yeah, that's 50, very cool.
51-48 barn burner.
You might have something brewing here. It's like, oh, yeah, that's awesome. Like, if he were to take out what's somebody else that he probably shouldn't beat? I mean, if he were to be in contention to win the East in his first year, yeah, that's awesome. If he plays a great game against – if he coaches a great game against Alabama, that's awesome. First year. You're not putting those expectations. But as years go along, you do expect him to compete for the East every year. You expect him to be building a team and building a program that can win an East, that can get – it's the – no, baby steps. First, you got to win the East. Slowly make it back to the SEC championship game and put yourself back out there as a perennial force in the East. Then you worry about the next steps, taking out Alabama. Eventually, somebody is going to have to come in here and beat Alabama. Like, yeah. It's just – maybe it doesn't happen because nobody is beating Alabama, even in the conference.
We just wait for Saban to retire.
Yeah, but like eventually,
that's literally it.
It eventually does have to happen. Like you can't every year. You can't just be like, "Well, Alabama's in a league of their own. We're not worried about them." No, eventually, as years go on, you need to be worried about trying to beat them.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't think expectations are just one solid defined thing. Expectations,
they fluctuate,
vary contextually. So your expectation. As the coaching staff and for the players, you know, you say it's to win every game, but really, I mean, the expectations that you're building are setting up are to build a program that will be competing with Florida, with Georgia, and with Alabama every year. Mm-hmm. Now, does that mean that's your expectation for this year? No, that's probably unfair to hold yourself to that expectation. And then also, you know, there should be different expectations for the fans and then for the team. You know, as fans, I don't think it's fair for us to expect, you know, us to really be able to compete with Florida, Georgia, Alabama, you know, right now, next year, maybe 2 years from now. But as a team, you have to. You have to expect to win every game you play. You have to have those high expectations for yourself if you ever want to achieve exceptional things. Because if you're just setting your bar at let's beat Kentucky, let's beat Missouri, let's beat South Carolina, then that's how you become Missouri, South Carolina, and Kentucky.
Exactly. We don't want that.
Strong point. Yeah. I see what you're saying there, and God, I mean, you guys are right. It makes all the sense in the world. I think that my side of the argument is more from, you know, I see obviously the points I'm trying to make instead of saying that you guys are wrong, right? Because I think you're 1,000% right. It's always got to be the goals. Charlie's right in that there's different expectations depending on who you're asking. And Brandon's right. You know, you don't want to lose sight of what your goal is. And maybe if you come in a little stagnant, right, and kind of what your expectations for the season are, then you do lose a little bit of expectation. You do lose a little bit of momentum. We always make a joke about it. But there is that exciting time that the last month of the offseason builds into the season where, yeah, man, people get a little sheepy. And you might start predicting a win over Florida, a close game against Georgia, or something like that, because it at least raises the excitement. Something typically happens later on to make us, you know, kind of jump overboard. But there is that excitement about the weeks leading into the season. And you're right. If you don't have maybe the kind of correct expectations, if you're just like, well, can't wait for the Kentucky and Vanderbilt games this year, those are the ones we're supposed to win, you probably do have significantly less energy heading into the season. So I see what you're saying, and again, it's not like people are clamoring every day. Well, Fulmer said you got to beat these three. No, of course not. But you know, I do think it's an interesting conversation that is a little bit dated, maybe. So I like the idea of maybe evolving it a little bit, but still got to have your right goals and places you want to go as a program.
But I mean, like, what I mean, Pruitt's record was obviously 0-3. Or 0-9 in his 3 years against those three teams.
And he got booted quick.
And quite frankly, we weren't even competitive in any of those games. So if you're not even competitive with those teams, I mean, what?
That's true. I mean,
how long do you hold on to a guy if you're not even on the same level as where you're trying to be?
Well, that's a great point. And you know, I'll cross the line in the sand and jump over to your side. You know, like, if you are expecting to just beat Kentucky, Vanderbilt, and South Carolina every year, what if you did? I mean, are you going to go 6-6 forever? But you're considering that good? Then you get to the point where you're like, well, we don't have a ceiling, or we're maybe at the ceiling, because, again, we're not trying to push ourselves to have those higher levels of goals. So we just sit there as a mediocre team. Maybe I'm convincing myself of the other side as I'm talking. But, yeah, I think that you guys make excellent points. I think that's an interesting conversation all around. So, if you got an opinion on that, send us a tweet, either at Fox Sports Knox or any of our Twitter accounts individually, or go ahead and give us a call. We got about 25 minutes left in the show today, and we'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear about it a little bit. All right, let's go ahead and take a quick break right here. See what's on the other side. Maybe an opening drive. Maybe we'll have a story to get into. It'll be a surprise. We'll have to wait and see. But either way, it'll be good. Don't go anywhere. All right, here we go, back here on the Blitz. The time is 10:37 a.m. We are making our way through the second hour of the show today, having a little bit of fun on a Thursday, looking forward to Friday, and then looking forward to the weekend. Orange and white game, pregame bonanza with Fan Run and Outkick. It's going to be a blast. They got free drinks handed out the door for the first 20 people. I can't wait. But until then, still got a little bit more to talk about here on the radio. Guys, the Oakland A's just keep winning. They walked it off in the bottom of the 10th inning thanks to a pair of errors by the Twins as they have won their 11th straight. We talked about them winning 10 in a row yesterday. Ah, easy. It's a nice casual 14-13 or 13-12, whatever it was. Nice casual win for the A's. Elsewhere in the sports world, one of the big things that I had seen on my Twitter last night, and obviously because it's got the most local ties, I guess, to it, but the Chance, tell me a little bit about what you think about the New York Knicks. Took down the Hawks last night. It was a big deal. The Knicks have jumped all the way up to fourth place. Could they be legit in any way?
They've won 8 straight.
My goodness.
I mean, I think they are legit. I don't think that they're a legitimate contender for a title.
Okay.
Or likely not going to get to the Eastern Conference Finals unless, I mean, the Nets stay banged up and, you know, you still see a lot of injuries, which you've seen a lot this year. The top teams, but I think they're a fun team to watch, man. They got some swagger to them, too. Julius Randle's playing like MVP. Derrick Rose is playing very solid in his role. Guys like, what else is that? Reggie Bullock, he's coming off the bench scoring. They're just a really fun team to watch. They really are.
What was the offseason where it was like the biggest NBA offseason ever? It was the one that, you know, the Knicks thought they were going to get Kevin Durant. They thought they were going to be in a lot of play. They ended up getting Julius Randle.
They thought they were going to get Durant and the first
and
pick
Kyrie.
And the first pick in the lottery.
Yeah, and Zion, yeah. Basically.
Well, yeah, well, they had the best odds to get the number one pick.
They got R.J. Barrett and nothing.
Yeah, so I remember they were so – I mean, Knicks fans were so ticked off because they couldn't get anybody. They're like, our biggest signing is
Julius
Randle.
Did you see how hyped
Randle.
They were last night?
Yeah, they better have been hyped.
No, they were hyped outside of Madison Square Garden. They could not – sit down. Yeah, I mean, like, they got guys like I said, Reggie Bullock, R.J. Barrett. They've revitalized Nerlens Noel. You hadn't heard that name. You hadn't heard that name in a while.
It was a guy that was once on the Mavericks.
Derrick Rose is playing some good basketball. Emmanuel Quickley. Like, they have a solid team of some. You know what they remind me of? The old school Grind City Grizzlies. Just a bunch of guys who are grinding out there.
They still need their Tony Allen.
They don't have a Tony Allen. And I would say Julius Randle is kind of their Zach Randolph, but better.
But is he trapping?
He might be trapping. He might have them bricks.
He might have the bricks. If you want to make it to a finals, you got to be trapping.
You got to be trapping like Z-Bo was. But like they remind me of that style of team. Like, they're just grinds. They don't have a lot of stars. Their biggest star is Julius Randle. And he should get the NBA's most improved player, without a doubt. I think that's easily his award this year. He's made himself into a household name. Think about if the Lakers would have kept him, too. Right now, if they had AD, LeBron, and Julius Randle, that's pretty sick.
Not a big man,
but would he have even turned out the way he is now?
Yeah, I know.
Would he have gotten that experience in the position?
Maybe not. You're right, because he got to leave Los Angeles, and then he went to what, New Orleans for a while? He's a Pelican.
Who's starting Knicks? Five is winning? The NBA all-strip club team or the NBA all-trap team?
Ooh.
Well, there might be some overlap. You're going
There might be a little overlap there. Because the trap team and the strip club team, they have a lot of similarities.
I'm sure Z-Bo was both.
Yeah, he was at the strip
club. Lou Williams has to be on the strip club team, but could he be on both?
I don't know.
James Harden is on the strip club team, so that's already a tough matchup.
Oh, man.
But no, I really like watching the Knicks, and they put it to the Hawks last night in a very high-scoring matchup, overtime as well, and it's pretty cool to see guys like Randle just killing the league right now. And I mean killing the league. Dude had 40 last night. I think he hit over 5 threes. Jeez.
Hope Trae Young's okay. Didn't he get hurt?
Did he?
I saw that he exited the game early. I'll look that up for you.
At the bar, I just remember looking over your shoulder at one point and seeing a highlight of Trae Young getting helped off the court.
He was helped off the court. Looks like he's getting an MRI on his injured left ankle.
Okay. I couldn't figure that one out. Mm-hmm.
And I would say a lot of this success is attributed to Tom Thibodeau.
It's one of your boys, right? Like, you're a big, huge Tom Thibodeau fan.
I love Tibbs. I think that the Bulls haven't been bleep since.
Yeah, they have not.
They haven't been anything since Thibodeau left. I mean, he always got a lot of flack for running players into the dirt and just kind of overworking them. But he's a good coach, and you have him on your staff for a couple years. He's bound to get you to at least a couple playoffs, and he's doing a great job with them.
Yeah, he certainly is.
They're playing defense and they're scoring.
That was just crazy last night. Like, I did not expect a Knicks Hawks games to be so frequent on my Twitter timeline as I was kind of winding down last night. And sure
Knicks
enough,
Knicks are the hot team to watch right now.
Sure enough, there they are. So, that's interesting. But so
you talk about
the A's
going,
and the Knicks on a couple of hot streaks in the sports world.
The Knicks are fourth right now in the Eastern Conference. They finished 12th last season.
And some other sports news.
Mm-hmm.
The NFL has officially approved some of their rule changes that were brought to the competition committee this offseason. They rejected the proposal for a full-time sky judge, but they are improving replay. Replay officials will not be able to throw flags or reverse calls on their own, but they can now offer referees advice based on what they've seen on the broadcast replays in the areas of possession and either completed or intercepted passes, the location of the ball relative to the boundary or in line, and whether a player is down by contact. So they're improving replay. A couple other things they're doing. The numbers thing that everyone anticipated would pass did pass, which loosens up the restrictions on numbers. So now you can see some skill position guys wearing single digits. And there's just more flexibility with what numbers players can wear.
So we are going to see the numbers.
Yes.
A lot of people's jerseys are going to get super messed up. The NFL is going to make a lot of money on people having to buy new jerseys.
Eliminated overtime in preseason games. Changed rule that forces a loss of down if two passes are completed behind the line of scrimmage, which I guess could lead to some cool trick plays now that you can throw two passes behind the line of scrimmage. I don't know. And the most interesting one, approved a one-year experiment in an attempt to make it easier to recover onside kicks. In 2021, the team receiving on kickoffs will be limited to 9 players within 25 yards of the ball. Last season, NFL teams only recovered 3 of 67 onside kicks. So the Eagles proposed this rule that teams can be given an option. Yeah, so you're going to have...
So, but do you have to, like... Let's go back to the halftime of the Saints-Colts Super Bowl, right? Sean Payton did the surprise onside kick. So this would be if you are establishing that there's an onside kick?
No, it is just every kickoff now, you can only have a maximum of 9 players within 25 yards of the ball. So, I mean, now basically onside kicks are, 11-on-9.
Wow.
Instead of 11
That's
on 11.
Interesting. I guess I had misheard you, and I thought you were going the opposite way, making it harder for the kicking team to recover the ball. That would have been ridiculous. But all right, here we go. Hopefully, it's some more onside kicks next year. But also, that might mean a couple more tragic endings for some of your teams. Remember the Falcons' onside kick last year, or their failure to recovery when it just kind of the Cowboys' kick. Just kind of died right there, and nobody jumped on it.
I like that they're at least making an effort because they have kind of really hurt the opportunity for onside kicks, and that is an important part to at least be able to have a fighting chance.
Yeah, and that could be that's a massive part of the game in the last couple minutes of a fourth quarter. I mean, that can really change things, take the excitement from 0 to 100 in an instant.
There was one thing that was pretty disappointing. The Buffalo Bills proposed a rule that pushes back job interviews for general manager and head coaching positions until after the championship round of the playoffs and preventing hires until after the Super Bowl. That was one that people were pretty interested in. They did not reject it. The competition committee didn't. However, they did table it for more research.
Wow. Okay.
But, you know, part of the, you know, the Rooney Rule and whatever else, and trying to get more minorities into coaching, well, part of it this offseason is Todd Bowles and Eric Bieniemy. If these teams weren't rushing to go ahead and conduct their interviews and hire their coaches, both of those guys could have ended up as head coaches. Mm. But teams were filling their spots and conducting their interviews while those two were still coaching teams all the way up to the Super Bowl. And it's like that way for a lot of really good assistants. They're not getting the opportunity to interview, or it's just distracting from the playoffs. They're just trying to push that cycle back and, you know, just naturally make things better.
You know, and that's, I feel like that's true in a lot of different sports. I think that should maybe be more of a universal rule. I like the idea so much more of, hey, free agency begins, even for coaches, after the sport ends. Then you can all have the same opportunity, same equal value to, but then again, maybe if you're playing that long, maybe you shouldn't be equal. Maybe you should have to go a little bit uphill. Hey, final segment of the Blitz is coming up next. All right, here we go. Wrapping up the show today. Gentlemen, it has been one of those days we've really hit just about everything under the sun, essentially. We started out the show talking about you guys' adventure last night out on the town, including a little bit of friendly darts competitions between Chance and Charlie. You can go back and find the winner there in the first hour of the podcast. Also talked a little bit about Joe Milton, some of the news story that came out yesterday from the Orlando Sentinel, talking about how he would be making his decision coming up on Saturday. Talked a little bit about the basketball team and what would be going on there in the future. Talked a little bit about just Tennessee fandom in general, and wrapped it up with a couple of sports stories there at the end. So, hey, in case you missed anything, you definitely want to go back to the podcast, check it out, make sure you hit everything from today because it was all good. That being said, you guys ready to roll? Final segment of the show. A little if you haven't heard.
If you have not heard.
What if we have? We've never answered that question. It's like, well, I have heard that. We've never established
what
you should do in that situation.
That happened to me 2 weeks ago when I tried to bring up the shrimp and the cereal story, and you guys were like, yeah, we heard. We talked about it.
You just roast the other person. That's what happens.
Yeah, we shut it down.
All right, so now we know.
If you haven't heard, Floyd Mayweather and Logan Paul's boxing match has a new date.
Oh.
And it is set.
What was the old date?
I don't know.
Oh.
But it's set for June 5th.
Really? Yeah. This thing's going to happen?
It's what it's looking like.
Is this Logan or Jake?
Logan.
They're the same.
Okay, because the other one apparently has called out Conor McGregor this morning.
Oh, what is their problem?
Did the other one
what if the other one
fight this past weekend?
Yeah, he's the one. Jake is the one that fought Ben Askren.
So he's the one who called out McGregor.
Who's the one that fought in the that beat up Nate Robinson?
Maybe still Jake.
I think
Jake.
That was also Jake.
That was also Jake.
Yeah,
or that might have been Logan.
No. I don't know.
It was the blonde one.
They're both blonde.
Jake. They look the same.
I can't tell them apart. All I know is that Logan Paul is fighting Floyd Mayweather, allegedly, on June 5th in Miami.
For lots of money. If you haven't heard, you guys familiar with Dante Bichette?
No. Yes, former Colorado Rocky.
Former great. Rocky. Also apparently played for the Brewers at one point. Well, he met his wife outside of a store across the street from Fenway. Now, why is that important, you may ask?
Why is that important?
His son, Bo Bichette, is now a star player for
the
Blue Jays.
What about
Blue Jays, right?
Bo Bichette is a star player for the Blue Jays. And last night, he hit a home run completely out of Fenway that landed on the doorstep of the same building that his father, while on a trip to Boston for baseball, met his mother like 30 years before that day.
Wow.
Really?
Very cool.
What are the odds?
I have to say, very cool.
If you haven't heard, a spinoff TV show is in the works over at Hulu. How I Met Your Father is in development, a spinoff of How I Met Your Mother.
That's what the Bo Bichette thing was. It's How I Met Your Father.
Now I got it.
Took me a second.
Hillary Duff is going to star in this show.
She's still alive and healthy?
Dude,
I mean, she ain't that old.
She's made a hell of a comeback.
Honestly,
I
didn't know. I felt like most of those the women that were the teen stars in her age are just all.
Look at it. I will watch a show. I will watch a show with her as the lead.
Oh my goodness. The only thing that could be better is if it was Mila Kunis.
Whatever happened to Lizzie McGuire?
That's the only thing that can make it better?
That's her.
Disagree.
Well, I mean,
yeah.
I don't know. I'm scared they're going to ruin this show, though.
If you haven't heard, former Tennessee defensive lineman John Mincy set to transfer to Arkansas State and play for Butch Jones. Mincy appeared in 24 games for the Vols, totaling 18 tackles, 2.5 tackles, 4 losses, and 1 sack, 6'3", 276-pound Mincy from Clinch County High School in Homerville, Georgia. Going to team back up with Butch.
Was he recruited by Butch?
He was.
Okay. So that makes sense.
Why else would you go?
I just had to clear.
It makes a lot of sense.
Just had to state the obvious there.
Not getting a lot of play time. Former coach recruits you in a group of five. You go there, likely start, get more play time. Maybe.
He was old enough to be a Butch guy?
I think so. I'm pretty sure that's what it's.
No way that's possible. No.
National calendar days.
Yes, sir.
National Earth Day. As we talked about earlier, go dig up your time capsules.
Love it.
If you can find them. National Jelly Bean Day. You guys like jelly beans?
Disgusting.
Oh, Charlie, you said we were going to plant a tree.
Yeah, I looked into it. Trees are expensive.
No.
But right. We can still figure it out.
Bleep the earth, huh? National Take Your Daughter and Sons to Work Day.
Not bad.
National Teach Children to Save Day. Okay. And National Girl Scout Leaders Day. Shout out to the Girl Scouts of America.
And shout out to the cookies as well. Love those. Hey, see you tomorrow. Same time, same place.